Good morning, everyone. We're going to go ahead and get started and open up the Committee on Judiciary. Welcome and thank you for being here Tuesday. We have five bills that are up for public hearing and possible work sessions today. We're going to somewhat go out of, well, we're going to start at the top, but we're going to delay a couple just because the presenters are going to be in later. So why don't we go ahead and open up our first one, which is House Bill 2357.
Thank you, Chair Pruszynski, members of the committee. House Bill 2357 extends the existing judicial authority to impose contempt of court on corporations to modern business entities. There's a dash one amendment that just went up on OLIS this morning that all it does is remove the emergency clause from the bill. And we would still need the fiscal and revenue impact for that dash one amendment.
All right. Cheryl, I know you're here to testify. Why don't you come on up? Is there anyone else who's going to want to give testimony on House Bill 2357? Good morning.
Good morning, Chair Pruszynski, members of the committee. My name is Cheryl Heemstra. I'm the Deputy Legislative Director at the Oregon Department of Justice, here today in support of House Bill 2357, which passed unanimously through the House. Brief history on this particular corner of the law. So this was last updated in 1991. And in 1991, pretty much the only business entity available in Oregon was the corporation. So it applied to corporations. In 1993, Oregon passed its limited liability company statute, allowing LLCs to operate in Oregon. So this bill merely updates this area of the law to include LLCs and limited partnerships, all the entities that have come after that 1991 date. For the bill, we checked in with the business community, and we heard no objection. You heard there's a dash one taking out the emergency clause on the House side. We heard one of the themes from Representative Post was to kind of take a look at emergency clauses. So out of a courtesy to that, we agreed to take out the emergency clause on the Senate side, if you're willing to do that. The bill, as I mentioned, updates for LLCs. In current law, you can hold a corporation in contempt, or you can hold a high managerial agent or the board of directors in contempt. In the bill, you'll also see the equivalence of those in the bill for LLCs, so the manager of the LLC. Just an update to this corner of the law, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
All right, thank you. Are there any questions?
My only question was going to be about the emergency clause, and now it's just taken away. So I don't have it.
All right. So we will wait for the emergency clause amendment paperwork to catch up, and it seems like we'll be able to move it out pretty quickly after we get that. So we won't schedule it for the – I mean, it's going to get scheduled on its own once we get everything. We won't worry about carrying it over since we're now in the first part of the second chamber bills, unless we just want to keep that – momentum going. So why don't you just stay there for a second. I'll ask one more time. Is anyone else wanting to give testimony on 2357? Not seeing anyone. We'll close that public hearing. We're going to go ahead and open up our next public hearing, which is on House Bill 2358A. And Michael?
Chair Pruszynski, members of the committee, House Bill 2358A is an update to the statutes on charitable gaming. It raises the allowable prize amount for charitable bingo and lotto games from $2,500 per game to $5,000 per game. It also increases the operating expense limit for charitable games, the number of hours and days per week the charity may operate the games, and the number of hours an individual may work operating the games. There are currently no amendments and no revenue or fiscal impact.
All right, thank you. Elizabeth, thank you for joining us. Cheryl, are you going to lead?
Yes. Chair Pruszynski, members of the committee, my name is Cheryl Heemstra. I'm the Deputy Legislative Director at the Oregon Department of Justice. With me today is Elizabeth Grant. She's the attorney in charge of our charitable activities section. As you probably know, DOJ is tasked with enforcing the charitable laws of Oregon. Last year, I think last summer, early fall, we sat down with the licensees, the people who are under this law, and said, it's been a while since we've done an update. Is there anything we can do to update this area? And that is the bill before you. As Mr. Lance mentioned, just updates, for reasons of inflation, updates the prize limits from $2,500 to $5,000, gross gaming receipts from 18% to 22%. the number of hours you can work from 30 to 40, and that licensees can operate these games from 3 to 4 days a week. So again, we collaborated with the nonprofit association. You'll see testimony from the House side that they did support the bill on the House side, and went through without objection. So again, just another little update bill, and we're happy to answer questions should you have any.
All right, questions. All right, that we'll take care of that. Ladies, thank you very much. Let me just see if anyone else wants to give testimony today on 2358A. Not seeing any, we're closing the public hearing. And Michael, do we have all the paperwork we need?
We do, Chair Prozonsky.
All right, I'll go ahead and open up a work session on House Bill 2358A.
Mr. Chair, I'll move House Bill 2358A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
All right, Senator Thatcher moves House Bill 2358A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Any objections? So ordered. And the guy with the red tie to my right, you got the memo, so would you be so kind to carry this bill? Senator Dimbro will be our carrier. Thank you very much.
I knew I should have worn another tie.
That'll close the work session on 2358. And let's go ahead, and we're going to drop down to
2777.
I got it underneath here. 2770. Opened up a public hearing on 2777.
Chair Prozonsky, members of the committee, House Bill 2777 gives mass transit districts the option to create an alternative administrative hearings process to resolve transit-related violations. Under HB 2777, mass transit districts would be able to reduce fines or order community service as an alternative. Additionally, a rider would not be required to participate in the administrative process and could request a court hearing. There is a Dash 1 amendment being offered by Senator Dimbro. It would require mass transit districts to track data relating to each violation subject to the administrative process and allow TriMet to convene a community oversight work group. There is a minimal fiscal and revenue impact on the underlying bill, but we do not have the paperwork on the amendment.
All right. So I have a number of people who want to give testimony. There are three that look like are here up from or down from TriMet. Bernie, Eric, and Annalise, I guess. I'll let you all three go first, and then Senator Dimbro, I know you got the amendment. Did you want to make comment now, or you want to wait until we get through this?
I think we can. I'll have a dialogue with our friends from TriMet.
Okay.
Thanks.
Good.
Good morning.
Good morning, Chair Prozonsky, members of the committee. Bernie Bottomley with TriMet. Thank you for the time this morning. This piece of legislation is an outgrowth of a series of efforts that TriMet has undertaken at the urging of its Transit Equity Advisory Committee, or TEAC, which is a group of community members who monitor issues related to equity on the transit system and advise the TriMet board on those issues. That committee has identified concerns about the enforcement, fair enforcement mechanisms that TriMet uses, and primarily the outcomes, and looking at whether there are disparities in the application of fair enforcement. As part of their work, TriMet commissioned a study of a external advisory group from Portland State University to look at the outcomes of the fair enforcement system, did identify some issues, that, although they didn't find any systemic disparities, they did find some areas of concern, primarily having to do with repeat offenders, so folks who kind of get enmeshed in the system and don't find a way out. And the result of that study was advice to TriMet to look at ways to provide off-ramps for folks who, so they don't get caught up in the system in a way that doesn't have an off-ramp. So as a result of that, we worked with TIAC and other community members to develop this proposal, which is basically designed to give us some flexibility and to give riders who violated our fare ordinance some flexibility in addressing that that issue, rather than having them automatically go to court and face the $175 fine. That's the presumptive fine for this for a fare violation. It provides the option of a non-judicial administrative review that occurs within the TriMet system, where the fare, fine can be lowered, and if folks don't have the resources to pay the fine, or if they want to do community service as an alternative to paying the fine, that's an option. It's something that we used to be able to do through community court, but because of budget changes and so forth, that's no longer an option. So this kind of community service option historically has been available, but in the recent years has not. So we think it's a very good approach to addressing that repeat offender kind of scenario where somebody gets a fare violation, they can't pay the fine, they don't show up for their court case, they repeat the offense, they get caught again, eventually they get an exclusion. If they get multiple exclusions, they can eventually be subject to a stiffer penalty and a potentially even jail time if they violate the interfering with public transit code. So this provides an off-ramp to that and a way to get them out of that potential downward cycle. So with that, I know the Dash 1 amendments have been presented, and be happy to answer questions about that.
All right. Who's like go next?
Sure. I can. My name is Eric Van Hagen. I'm a senior deputy general counsel for TriMet. And maybe what I would do is just briefly step through kind of what we would be doing with this process. I think Mr. Bottomley described why we want to do this. And I would maybe spend a few moments on kind of exactly the nuts and bolts of how this would work. Currently, if you are cited for fare evasion on the TriMet system, in the ordinary run-of-the-mill case, you'd be given a citation like this one. It's a violation form. It would be filed with the court. What we propose to do under this new, under House Bill 2777, is that you would still be issued this citation. It would then be stayed for 90 days. For all intents and purposes, it'd go up on a shelf. And during that 90-day period, you'd have a couple options that our board would enact via an ordinance. You could pay a fine directly to TriMet. If you satisfy that by paying that fine, we would never file this with the court. And so there would be no court record for the person who didn't pay their fare. This bill also authorizes a community service option for those people who elect that option or want to engage in community service. Again, you satisfactorily complete that community service within the time period that this has stayed, never goes to the court. The bill also permits a mass transit district to have a hearing process. So if people wanted to have an internal hearing, they could still do that, and the citation could be adjudicated internally, again, without going to the courthouse. But it does retain the court process so that if the citation is not resolved in one of those ways described, it would then still be referred to the court. And that was done very intentionally for a couple of different reasons. First of all, we wanted to give people the opportunity to have a neutral hearing. If they wanted to have a judicial hearing, they could elect to have that process outside of TriMet. If they didn't, if there was a hearing process and they were unsatisfied with it, they could go to a judge. So we give them that option there. Secondly, this it would allow someone who just ignores the fine and the citation process, this would then be filed with the court. It could then be reduced to a judgment, and there you would have the ability to enforce that judgment in the court process. The third important reason, though, that the court system is still there is that it would provide a balance and a check for us, I think, as TriMet, because we'd have to make this option when we create this process, we'd have to make it a better alternative than going to court, right? So you know what the standard is if you go to court. We want to encourage people to enter into this process, this alternative process that we set up. And so we would have to make it something that is a more attractive option for people than going to court. And I think it gives our board the flexibility to do that. The board would, the TriMet board would be authorized to set a fine amount and establish a community service process. The thought now is probably at this point, most likely outcome would be to partner with community existing community organizations to allow for community service to take place. But the board would have those final sort of small but important policymaking decisions left. That would be enacted through an ordinance, and ordinances go before our board in two consecutive meetings, the first reading and the second reading, and it's not enacted until the second reading, actually 30 days after the second reading. So there's a public process at multiple board meetings to enact an ordinance that would take sort of the last leg of this process. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions about the process and what we intend to do here.
So before we take the next testimony, Eric, since you brought this up, I think I'd like to just do this now. Walk us through, in the sense of I'm getting the citation, I'm familiar with the citations at the bottom. It gives you the time and date and place where you're supposed to appear. Based on this going out for potentially 30 or 90 days, what notice is someone going to get to say, here's your other options, or how are you going to get them in front of this TriMet process?
So folks would still get a date. It would just be beyond that 90 days on the citation form. But then we would have to engage that person and make them aware of these options. There's a couple of different ways we can do that, and it may involve multiple ways that we attempt to accomplish that. We're going to have the person's mailing address. So we're going to try and contact them, probably via mail. We will also, I hope, be moving soon to a mobile printing system for these citations, so that our fair enforcement officers will have like a small kind of thermoplastic printer that they will carry on their person that will print these citations. That will give us the opportunity to add additional information beyond the uniform citation form. If those were not, for some reason, an option, we'd probably provide additional materials, you know, in the form of a slip of paper that went with this citation, so you get the citation and something else that gives you information about your options for payment beyond that. But that customer service, you know, I've always said that the success of a program like this would really depend on the efficacy of our outreach and the information that our customers have about how to have an opportunity to utilize this process.
All right. And before Senator Denbro, one other follow-up, and that's basically I would strongly encourage you to do that on the date of citation, to have something that you give to them, because let's face it, the address they may be providing you may not be a good address for you to be able to have a contact. And it seems to me, to have proper notice of these options, give it to them on the front end when they get the tickets, so they know, okay, I can do whatever. Senator Denbro?
Absolutely.
Yeah, no, just I was going to ask, following up, Eric, I would expect that a number of the individuals who would receive such a citation won't have a mailing address. So how would you deal with that?
Chair Pozanski, Senator Denbro, I think that the proposal that Chair Pozanski put forward in terms of giving them something at the time, I think would be critical. I think we would want to make as much contact with these people and give them every different opportunity, every avenue. But that the moment when that citation is issued is going to be the one face-to-face that we're going to have with that person. And it is our only opportunity to ensure that they have that information available. So we will make sure that that is absolutely part of the process, whether it's a continuation of the existing printout or an addendum that we provide them. We would make sure that they get something, because again, we want this program to be successful, and it's not going to be successful if people don't know how to take advantage of it.
If I could just follow up, and that interaction tends to happen off the bus, right, or off the train. I mean, that conversation probably wouldn't happen on the bus.
Senator Pozanski, Senator Denbro, typically yes. Those are the fair enforcement missions I've been on. They will typically move off the train and issue the citation at that point. And they've got their site books, and this would just be something that they kind of add in that is a handout that goes along with it.
All right. Why don't we go and take the rest of the testimony?
Annalisa. Good morning, Chair Prusinski and members of the committee. My name is Annalisa Curler, and I'm here representing the TriMet Transit Equity Advisory Committee, affectionately known as TEAC. TEAC is a TriMet advisory committee representing a diverse cross-section of community leaders charged with providing insights and guidance to TriMet's general manager on transit equity and access issues. Members of the committee represent a diverse population, including minority and low-income communities who are disproportionately transit-dependent. So over the past year, TEAC has done a very deep dive into TriMet's fare enforcement policies and procedures. This was very much in response to community concerns that we have heard from a number of our constituents. So we looked at their current, TriMet fare enforcement program's current procedures. We listened in on a number of focus groups with transit-dependent writers on the subject specific of fare enforcement. We reviewed customer surveys that they did, as well as fare enforcement data. And so this fall, after doing that deep dive, we developed a set of recommendations to improve the fare enforcement program at TriMet and presented those to TriMet. We were really happy to see that a number of our recommendations were adopted by TriMet. And this bill very much comes out of a number of those recommendations. So if you can't tell, and I think I forgot to say that, we very much support this bill. So really chief among our recommendations was really wanting to see a decriminalization of fare enforcement. We wanted to find ways to reduce the fine, offer community service, and if possible, avoid the court system entirely. When we had conversations with transit-dependent riders, what we often heard was, the reason I got a fine is because I didn't have the $2.50 or the $5 for the pass. So how can I have $175 for the fine? And they were wondering, is there a way for that fine to be less? Is there a way that we could I could do community service instead? We also heard some hard stories about the long-term impacts of being unable to pay the fine and the kind of snowball effects that we see when fines and exclusions add up and what that does to people's ability to work and meet their basic needs. We really think that this bill goes a long way in addressing many of those concerns. It sets up an administrative procedure such that folks would have the ability to pay a lower fine, to do community service, and hopefully avoid the court system entirely. So TEAC definitely supports this bill, and if enacted, we look forward to working with TriMet to kind of talk about what that might look like.
All right, thank you. Questions, Senator Manning first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple of questions. First, I understand that the cost to ride one of these transit trains is $2.50, but the actual fine could amount to $75.
Presumptive fine is $175.
$175. Yeah. Okay. So here are my questions. One is that, have you considered some type of program that could provide a voucher to replace if someone didn't have the money, $2.75 or whatever, if there was a means as a customer participation that you could provide them with a voucher that would cover that for that incident? How widespread is this? And the third one, what does your enforcement unit look like?
Chair Prusinski, Senator Manning, good question. So our fare inspectors do have vouchers that they take with them when they go out on enforcement missions, and there are times when they will, you know, somebody gives them a story that is convincing and compelling, and they will give them the voucher and say, okay, just don't let it happen again. And in a lot of cases, they do warnings as opposed to, issuing a citation. But they're out on the system a lot, and they start to recognize folks. And if they see somebody repeat offending who already has warnings, and they have a system that they can check their ID if they are given a name that pops up in the system, then they will issue a citation. So, yes, they do have vouchers, but it's at the discretion of the fare enforcement staff. And then in terms of the number of staff that we have, I think we have 14 fare inspectors. That number is going to increase next year, I think, to 20. And then, of course, we have supervisors who are on the system who can also do fare enforcement, and we have police. We contract with Portland, Gresham, Beaverton police forces for a transit police unit. Their job is not primarily fare enforcement. They are more for looking at more serious issues on the system, but they can issue fare violations as part of their work. Typically don't. I think those were the two out of the three questions that you had.
How widespread is I'm assuming that it has to be huge for you to construct a policy or procedure.
So like yeah. This. And Eric may be able to help me with the number of citations that we issue in a year.
Chair Przanski and Senator Manning, we issue on average about 21,000 citations a year. That's within Multnomah County. I got numbers from Multnomah County, and in a two-year period, they issued 42,009 citations.
$2.75.
$2.50 is the one-way single ride ticket.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's so we have typically 300,000 trips a day, 100 million trips a year. So it's proportional.
Yeah. Senator Dimbrough?
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chair. First of all, let me say I really applaud TIAC and TriMet for bringing this forward. I think this is a real step in the right direction. I just wanted to address the amendment that I put in and ask you about it. I put it in at the request of OPAL, which advocates for low-income communities of color who are users of transit. And I think there was an interest in making sure there was data collection, to see how the new system is being used, by whom it's being used, the extent to which the community service is turning out to be a viable option, et cetera. And to have a standing committee, I think, of the TIAC that could be monitoring this this work and making it public, reporting it to the public. And, I'm just wondering what your reaction to that is, if the amendment, in your estimation, is in order, if this is a program that you're comfortable with.
Chair Przanski, Senator Dimbrough, I think the intent and the goal is something we completely embrace and would be willing to commit to. TIAC is a permanent committee that advises TriMet, and we value their input and would be leaning on them heavily to help us guide the development of the implementing rules and so forth that would go underneath the legislation. We want to be completely transparent about the outcomes, and we are as interested as I think everyone else is to determine how the program can work and whether it's effective in accomplishing its goals. All the information that is gathered as part of the would be gathered as part of this work is public record, and then we would be happy to. I think one of the interests expressed in the Dash 1 amendments is that information be aggregated in a way that and analyzed, so in a way that people can see, how the aggregate effect is working, and we'd be happy to do that and interested in doing that. The Dash 1 amendments themselves, I probably would need some work because they are intended to apply to TriMet, but the way they're drafted, they would also apply to other transit districts that have not adopted this kind of framework. And so I think there need to be discussion about that. And then there are a couple of issues. For example, the language talks about having a Lyft program recipient be part of the advisory committee, but we don't do fare enforcement on Lyft, so that may not be quite the right way to describe who should be on the committee, but we would be happy to commit ourselves and TriMet to working with TIAC and developing a broad-based committee that is advising both TIAC and TriMet on how to implement the legislation.
And just a follow-up, I just got these amendments myself late yesterday, so haven't really had a chance to study them either, but I'd be happy to work with you to see if if there are other ways, aside from the amendments, to make sure that there's a commitment there. I mean, I hear you're articulating a commitment. Maybe we could make that more precise.
We'd be happy to do that.
Yeah. And the chair would request that y'all do that, because, I mean, if we can do this internally within TriMet, I think that'd be a better way to do it. Plus, it will give more flexibility as you're going through this to make modifications as you do that. Senator Thatcher.
And I'm not sure if you would know the answer to this, but I'm wondering how many people have been cited for fare violations when they attempted to buy a ticket and couldn't because the stupid kiosk wouldn't accept their money. I've had struggles with that myself. And I just wonder if you do have any, are you going to look to make your machines a little less persnickety in accepting money? Or
Chair Prezansky, Senator Thatcher, an excellent point. We have, in the last 2 years, the kiosks, the fare machines, have gone from about a 60% uptime to the most recent analysis on that is about 98%. So we've very much focused on making those machines work. So we have fewer of those problems than we used to. The kiosks are integrated with our information technology system, so we know when they're down, and the fare inspectors get notice of that. So to Senator Manning's question earlier about vouchers, the fare inspectors know when the machines are down, and they don't issue citations when folks say, I had a bad machine. So,
yeah. Senator Lithicum.
First of all, you can do some work to get rid of that fine. With regard to Senator Dembrough's amendment, the six-member work group, et cetera, TIAC is already a fairly large 14, 15-member organization. Are individuals of various categories included there, like Senator Dembrough includes disabled, includes individuals under 30 years old in this widespread category for understanding who your riders are. Does TIAC already composed of that sort of membership?
Chair Prezansky, Senator Lincoln, great question. So I'd have to look at Senator Dembrough's bill more closely to look at all the categories, but the ones that you listed off, yes. We do not, however, have requirements for those categories to sit on the current committee, but currently a number of those categories, yes.
I'd like to commend you, if I can continue, Ms. Chair, to have those there just without the legislature forcing them on TriMet is kudos to the TriMet organization, so thank you.
Yeah. All right. Any other questions for this panel? Thank you all very much for coming
Thank
forward.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
So I have three other people that have signed up, Sybil, Kimberly, and Maria. Why don't y'all three come up while they're coming up? Is there anyone else who will want to give testimony on House Bill 2777?
Good morning, Chair Prezansky and members of the committee. My name is Maria Hernandez, and I'm Advocacy Coordinator at OPAL Environmental Justice Oregon. As mentioned last time, OPAL's main priority is to represent our members' priorities, values, and concerns. Given that most of our members are riders, low-income, multiracial, in general, has a very different diverse, including young individuals. Today I'm here to address some of the concerns that our constituency, but also some of our community members have with House Bill 2777. While we recognize that this bill does in fact address us and it's a great first step to taking into consideration fair citations, fair enforcement within mass transit agencies, definitely needs a couple other recommendations moving forward. Under current Oregon law, a rider can either be cited, excluded, or given a citation with an IPT. As we know, some of those have persecutions or have farther limitations when it comes to finding employment or finding housing. And as we also know, we already have a housing crisis. We also have concerns with TriMet's current ability to do fair enforcement and fair citations. To your point, Vice Chair Senator Thatcher, we have a current member who have been in the system who currently oftentimes find themselves forgetting something on TriMet and going in and trying to tell the fair enforcers that they're going in to get their jacket or getting something else and end up getting cited. While correct, we recognize that oftentimes those are certain instances and maybe coincidences of why those things happen. We really want to make sure that this is something that is being put on record, but it's also being considered. That being said, some of the other remaining questions that have come up with our constituency are the following. What happens when individuals cannot complete their community service due to physical, mental, or other limiting factors? What happens to members who don't have the ability to understand the current administrative process due to language barriers? How will mass transit agencies use the money obtained through the administrative process? How do we address the current disparities already in place given the PSU report issued in December, where 7% of black riders were found to be issued, 7% of riders, of black riders make up TriMet's diversity or Portland's diversity, while 18% get cited and 27% end up with an exclusion. 22%, I'm sorry. This therefore, we propose that mass transit puts its statute criteria in place on the bill in order to make sure that those directly impacted are in fact part of the community advising team and are in fact people who are able to speak on behalf of their own personal experience and their own expertise. Community members should help determine what the community service or alternative procedure is and how it's assigned. In this matter, the benefit of the service can be widely felt, and in addition to that, can be tailored to the abilities of the individuals who are creating or who are assigned to that alternative other than fee citation. Those who will form part of the oversight committee will help keep the process accountable to the intention of this new process and ensure that the amount of the citation is not a burden to individuals affected. The data that is collected can help address the disparity to whom citations are given. These amendments will reassure our community that new procedures that are implemented will provide them with the fair and just process in which citations are given. It will relieve some of the burden that the current citations have in our communities by acknowledging that most individuals have different experiences and therefore oftentimes find themselves creating or wanting new alternatives. And I think, again, I do want to commend this bill is the first step. But if those amendments are not addressed in the bill in its first place, we want to make sure that the commitment is being addressed firsthand and the community members who are being affected are part of the conversation. And this not only includes folks with disabilities, but also includes folks who are young, who are part also of the system. We work with youth as well. We, in addition to that, work closely with folks who are multiracial, like I already said, multigenerational, who are older folks and find themselves oftentimes having limiting factors understanding current procedures already. So we want to make sure that these procedures, as it moves forward, has some criteria that is going to enable some understanding for folks who are already impacted by the system already. Thank you.
Thank you. Who's next?
Chair Przanski, members of the committee, my name is Kimberly McCullough. I'm here on behalf of the ACLU of Oregon. We support House Bill 2777. We also support some form of amendments along the lines that Senator Dembro introduced, potentially with some tweaks to them. You may recall that I was here before testifying in support of Senate Bill 357, which dealt with fare evasion as a form of IPT, the Class A misdemeanor. We see these two bills really as companions to each other. They're both trying to get at the same issue, and we see them as part of a larger solution that's actually needed to address the issue of fare evasion and fare enforcement. The other piece of it that's missing here, and that Senator Manning got to a bit, is we would like to see increased access to passes for folks who are low-income, folks with disabilities. We think that increasing access for people who don't have enough money to pay for their fares will also reduce fare evasion, just simply by making it possible for people to ride the bus or the train. You know, when folks have to get to a job or they have to get their kids to childcare, there's all sorts of things, or they have to go to the doctor. You know, transit is essential to our lives. So when folks don't have enough money, we really think that we should be helping them out so they can be productive and have productive lives. As far as the amendments go, I do have a few suggestions. First of all, just we really do support community engagement, are happy that TIAC exists, and realize that there may be some interplay here between TIAC and this other group, but we do think that something a little bit more robust would be appropriate here, just because there are some community trust issues, honestly. The reports that came out showing racial disparities in TriMet enforcement, and some of the stories that, you know, we hear stories at ACLU, people report things to us. There have been things that I think have damaged that trust to some degree, and so community engagement in the process, I think, will help rebuild that. How that exactly looks, you know, I'm not sure what exactly the right solution there is, but would be happy to participate in those conversations. And I would also say that one of the individuals identified on this list is somebody who's a member of the Oregon State Bar who is knowledgeable in civil rights law. I would be happy to participate in that, or to recommend someone to participate in that, or to have someone from the ACLU be part of that conversation. So I just wanted to put that out there. One thing that I did notice about the way that the amendment is drafted is it specifically refers to TriMet, whereas the larger bill refers to a mass transit district. I like the way that this is set up, because it basically makes the creation of this work group, it uses the word may, so they may create the work group, but then the consultation work group is required before an ordinance is imposed. So just like the general bill is applicable to all mass transit districts but is optional, they can opt into providing the administrative process. I would write this so that it applies to all mass transit districts. So say, for example, a district in Eugene or somewhere else, or Bend, decides to create this administrative process, that they then would also need to create a work group like this in case they don't have something like TIAC. One of the other things that I noticed is that the second section of the amendment has to do with looking at the disparities, and some of this information is already going to be collected related to our profiling bill, but I like how this is looking at what are the demographics? How do the demographics relate to how this administrative process is resolved? So what kind of deal are different people getting? And I think that information is really valuable. One thing I would note, though, is that the categories listed are race, ethnicity, and sex. And we also include age in the profiling bill. So I would add age to that category, because I think that that's... that's important. So I think that's all. I think that's all of my comments. Happy to answer any questions if you have them.
Thank you. Sybil?
Thank you, Chair Przanski, Vice Chair Thatcher, members of the committee. Sybil Hebb with the Oregon Law Center, also here in support of House Bill 2777. And I very much appreciate the work of the sponsors and of the agency and TIAC, thank you, in having these conversations and bringing this forward. And the stated goal of the prior panel was to look at decriminalization of these kinds of
events when a person is committing a FAIR violation. As you know, our clients are the lowest income Oregonians, and we have seen a growing reliance on mass transit, especially in the metro area where our clients are moving further and further away from the center of the city, and without bus, they're not making it to their court date, they're not making it to their appointment with our offices, they're not making it to school or to work, to critical health care appointments or other social services. So this is something, access to transit is something that is critical to our clients' abilities to go about their lives. And while a $2.50 fare may not mean much to a person who's earning a sufficient amount, for low-income Oregonians, it's often impossible to pay those fares. And so we worry about having a sanction, which under current law could be a Class A misdemeanor. We're very supportive of the efforts in Senate Bill 357 to reduce the sanctions of that violation, but those are consequences that are vastly disproportionate to the behavior and that have a disproportionate impact on people who are homeless and people who are low income and on seniors and on people with disabilities and many of the most vulnerable in our communities. So we really appreciate this effort. I guess the other comparison, I'm not an expert on how one sets a fine level amount, but if I drive my car and I park it in a parking space in downtown Portland, I'm paying $2 an hour, and if I don't do that, I get a $40 ticket. If I don't pay my bus fare, I understand I get a $175 ticket. And if this is a population that is specifically low income and potentially homeless, I don't know that that amount of fine is having the disincentive that maybe it's intended. And if there's no hope of collecting that money and it's something that's going to serve to spiral a person further into poverty, I think it would be important and interesting to look at those fare level assessments. I really appreciate the purpose behind the amendment of involving community stakeholders. In my experience, that leads to really good things. You learn things about one another. You open up the conversation and build trust. So we support the amendments as in the format that they need to be in behind that concept. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Questions for anyone on the panel? Senator Lithicum first, and then Senator Thatcher.
Just some curiosity, as you're describing the low fare collection and impacts, what do you see in terms of revenue potential? Is this revenue neutral? Is this will this cause problems with TriMet? TriMet's already, if I can loosely describe it, underwater.
I feel like that's something maybe one of the I feel like that might be a better answered by one of the prior panels, since I'm not familiar with TriMet's finances.
Thank you.
Do you guys want to answer that? I'll put you on the spot.
why don't we do this for a second? I just want to maintain, we've got a panel here. We'll come back to that. We'll bring them up. I'd rather let them, instead of we're doing this musical chairs. So if you have another follow-up
just this discussion led to that question.
We'll bring them back up. Senator Thatcher?
Yes, thank you. It seemed like some of the concerns brought up about people with disabilities, people who are young, old, speak different languages, may not understand, have different understanding levels. That sounded like something for rulemaking. And I think that's what you're getting at with the Dash 1 amendments, is how you're going to actually, you know, carry this policy out. It's in the underlying bill. There's a question as to, okay, so the mass transit district has to track data, and that would include race, ethnicity, and sex. How does one, I guess, safely ascertain those things?
Senator Thatcher, Chair Przanski, generally, the way that those things are tracked is by the perception of the officer. There's two sort of things. We're setting up this whole new system of data collection under our profiling bill, and so there'll be sort of a statewide standardized system. I understand, you know, City of Portland already is collecting that information. I'm not sure about whether or not TriMet is collecting that information yet. But once somebody is issued a citation, then there also is going to be information that is recorded about that person, information that's on a person's ID card or driver's license, and so that information is So you would not only have the perceived, something that's perceived by the officer or the TriMet enforcer, but also the information that's on their documentation.
See race or ethnicity on driver's license. Maybe it is. I don't know. I guess I never.
It is.
Hair color and eye color.
Yeah, it is. Yes.
Guess it is. All right.
Just a comment. You know, for $2.50 and to have a fine of $75, I think that's really excessive. I think that's extreme. Mm-hmm. I just want to get that out there.
We also remember that is presumptive. That's just presumed. That I'm assuming at some point they can give us some track record as to what how it's actually done. But I understand the disparity based on what we've heard as to what it would cost you if you didn't pay a parking ticket, blah, blah, blah. So, yeah. Senator Denbrough, did you have a follow-up?
No, I didn't.
All right. If there's any other questions for this panel, if not, if y'all would step back, thank you. And then, Eric, I don't know if you and Bernie want to come up or just one of you, however you want to do it.
Tim Prozanski, members of the committee, the issue I think was the question was, is TriMet, what's the disposition of the revenue that's generated by this program, and we don't know yet because we haven't set the fine levels, but our expectation is that this will cost us money. Because we'll have administrative costs, we'll have costs of working with community-based organizations to set up the community service programs, we'll have monitoring costs and so forth. So we're not expecting that there will be revenue, you know, generated in excess of our expenses as part of this program.
Senator Prozanski, just to add to that, when I started working on this about a year ago, I reached out to a number of different transit districts, and that's consistent with everything that I was told from other districts who do have these programs in place, that these are not, you know, if you're lucky, if you can break even when you consider the administrative costs that go into the administration of this. Also, just to follow up on an earlier question, the uniform citation form here that someone has given does include information in addition to name, address, sex, race, date of birth, height, weight, hair, and eye color. So those are all part of the traditional uniform citation. That's the information that's gathered, and we collect that information, and we would continue to make it available anonymized in aggregate form as a public record.
Any follow-up?
Just a thought, in terms of fair enforcement and fair inspectors and enforcing the rules, if this is a real losing proposition if we're not collecting fares at the end of the day or we're spending more money than the fares we do collect. So this whole process maybe needs to be rethought. I'm fine with your answers. Thank you.
All right. Senator Denbrough.
Mr. Chair, just following up on Senator Linthicum's perception earlier that TriMet is underwater, what is TriMet's condition right now, would you say?
Chair Prozanski, Senator Denbrough, TriMet has a AAA bond rating from both Standard & Poor's and Moody's. It's the only transit district that's independently established that has both of those ratings. Our situation is quite good. We were a number of years ago facing a very difficult financial situation. The board established a strategic financial plan and has stuck very closely to that over the last 3 years, and we've made substantial changes in the trajectory of the agency's finances. So we're in quite good shape right now.
All right. Any other questions? Gentlemen, thank you for coming back up. I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 2777, and that's going to take us back up to our other two bills that we have, and we're going to go ahead and open up one on House Bill 2611 is what we're going to start with.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chair Prozanski, members of the committee. House Bill 2611 modifies the existing law regarding reimbursement for law enforcement training expenses when the law enforcement personnel changes companies or agencies within 3 years. House Bill 2611 requires a request for reimbursement to be made in writing within 6 months and eliminates provisions related to reimbursement for parole and probation officers' training expenses. There are no amendments. There is a minimal fiscal impact and no revenue impact.
Kevin.
Chair Przanski and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kevin Campbell. I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon Association Chiefs of Police and the Oregon State Sheriff's Association to speak in favor of House Bill 2611. It's designed to create clarity around a law that was passed in 2009. It was a bill that was sponsored by Senator Joanne Verger from the South Coast, and it was Senate Bill 971. It was designed to address the challenge that's faced by agencies who have employed an officer, taken them through the basic training program, and some or all of their post-basic field training program, only to have the officer hired away by another agency shortly after that period. You can imagine the cost and investment that's occurred, and then the officer is gone before they can really become a productive part of the agency. So that bill was very important, but when it was structured, it created some unintended lack of clarity, and the lack of clarity has created some conflict among agencies that are seeking reimbursement and the agencies that have hired away an officer. And so this year we put together a work group. It was led by Chief Pete Kearns, who wanted me to greet the chair and the committee. He couldn't be here today, unfortunately. It was statewide, included small and large agencies from around the state, included state agency partners, including the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training. And it also included tribal and university police departments, so it was a pretty good spectrum of departments around the state. This bill deals with both police officers and corrections officers, and the bill that's before you now creates some key clarity so that when an agency is seeking reimbursement, they know the timelines, they're specific, they know what they can request as a qualifying expense, what they would receive depending on how long they've employed the officer who was hired away. And in the end, this comes forward with a complete consensus of those, that statewide work group. And so I know that we're pressing the time and you have another bill before you, but I did want to present the bill and its intention and ask for your support in moving this bill forward.
All right, questions? So I guess, Kevin, the only thing I was going to ask, looking at the catch line, it talks about subject to collective bargaining agreement and employment agreement. So I'm not sure when you're talking about having reimbursement or looking for compensation from a different agency, how those would be playing in. Are we talking about the impact on the actual individual officer, he or she, what their obligation would be if they make a move early on in their career?
Yeah, Chair Przanski, in some cases an officer enters into an agreement with an agency, and so those agreements are we recognize in the bill that those can occur. It's important to note that the bill really did focus on making sure the officer had the ability to move unless they've constrained themselves otherwise, because you know, agencies can hire officers away and officers can leave for a lot of different reasons. Sometimes it's family, sometimes it's other considerations. We didn't want to create a barrier to officers going to another employment that makes sense for them, but it does recognize that piece that you just mentioned.
Okay. Any other questions? All right. Kevin, stay there for a second. Is there anyone else who wants to give testimony on House Bill 2611? Not seeing, we'll go ahead and close the public hearing on 2611. We'll open a public hearing on 2618A.
Thank you, Chair Przanski, members of the committee. House Bill 2618A increases certain fees collected by sheriffs, such as the fee for service of a subpoena. There is no current amendment, and there is a minimal revenue and no fiscal impact. Thank you.
All right, thank Great. You. Kevin, you're going to lead?
Yes, I'm going to lead. Chair Przanski and members of the committee, for the record, Kevin Campbell again. I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon State Sheriff's Association to speak in favor of House Bill 2618, the A engrossed version. I'm here testifying on behalf of Jason Myers this morning. He wanted to be here, but at 3 in the morning on Sunday, he flew to Mexico because, as you know, in 2007, Deputy Sheriff Kelly Fredenberg was murdered. The person that murdered him fled to Mexico and was recently located. It's been a difficult process of pursuing extradition. As of both Sheriff Myers and District Attorney Walt Beglau are in Mexico right now working through the details of bringing that individual back to the United States. And so that's obviously a priority and very important to their department. And so that's why Jason's not here this morning. You realize this committee knows well that the Oregon sheriffs do much more than just policing and community corrections. They also serve documents, summons, subpoenas, citations, orders, and notices for a wide range of civil actions, suits, and proceedings where a fee is charged. The purpose of this bill is to seek an increase in these fees. The last time that the sheriffs came before the legislature to seek an increase was 2009. The increases you see in the bill itself is roughly structured at the CPI for that period of time. Reasonable increases, and in the House, it was clear that if you look at the private side of serving these kind of documents, this is far under the market and also does not cover costs. However, the increase does get us closer, and that's very important. So the bill does outline a number of increases. You can see them in there. With the chair and the committee's permission, one of the issues that we've been trying to address is a way of figuring out how to increase these just based on cost of living on a more regular basis as opposed to coming back every several years. There's really no rhyme or reason to that. And then in the intervening years, it just seems like we're trying to catch up. We had a provision in the original bill that would have tasked the state court administrator's office to look at the a specific cost of living increase measure. They're just simply not the right entity to make that calculation. So that we removed it in the House side. The House said, see if you can fix it in the Senate. And so with your permission, if we could have a little more time to take a look and see if we could bring back a recommendation to the committee, we would greatly appreciate that if it's possible. With me today is Tim Leader. He's really has more expertise in this whole area and has to deal with this in the Washington County Sheriff's Office. And so I figured if you had any technical questions, I'd be out of the game pretty early. So I thought I'd just let Tim, if he has a few comments and wants to talk a little bit about this in greater detail, to do that. And then if you have specific questions, I'll probably have a blank stare on my face and we'll turn to Tim. So,
good morning, Chair Przanski and members of the committee. So for the record, my name is Tim Leader. I'm the Civil Unit Manager for the Washington County Sheriff's Office. And as Kevin said, I'm really mainly just here to answer any technical or operational questions you might have. I've been doing this in this role for the sheriff's office for a little over 26 years, so I've been around for a little while. And I know we're running short on time, so without duplicating anything that Kevin has said with respect to why we've come to you with this bill, if you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer any of them.
All right, questions.
All right. I guess I do have one question. What I heard you say, Kevin, is even with this increase, it does not cover your costs.
Yeah.
How far off is it?
I can have Tim.
Yeah. I can tell you, if I were able to charge a fee for every civil document brought to us for service, as compared to our budget, our cost, I would have to charge approximately $80 per paper. However, approximately 30% of the papers that come in. So out of last year, we served about 9,000 civil cases. Only about 6,000 of those cases we were able to receive fees for. The 30% we could not charge fees for are statutorily prohibited from fees, such as restraining orders, other protection orders, criminal subpoenas. So if we were to look at covering costs with the documents that we could lawfully charge fees for, we would actually be up closer to $100 a paper.
Other questions? I guess the only thing is, Kevin, you're saying that the judicial department said that they weren't the ones to do the COLA. So I'm just trying to figure out who would be in the position to actually help facilitate that. wouldn't DAS themselves, I'm just trying to think of someone that has that skill set in-house that would be able to do that type of accounting calculation to adjust that.
Yeah, Chair Przanski and members of the committee, one of the considerations is, of course, we asked the judicial branch to do something for the executive branch in terms of the calculation. That's why they weren't ideal. We are looking at DHS, and the other option is because county sheriff's offices are a unit of government, can we give them the ability to increase based on a specific CPI mechanism that's recognized? And I've got it listed in the testimony, the one that had been identified, but that's the other option.
Okay.
The intent, if you're with your permission, is to work quickly to try to bring something back for your consideration.
No, that's fine. We don't have everything ready to go anyway, so that's fine with us. Any other questions or comments? All right, I do have one other person. Matt Klein wants to give testimony. Matt, why don't you come on up? While he's coming up, is there anyone else who wants to give testimony on 2618A? Good morning.
Good morning, Chair Przanski, members of the committee. My name is Matt Klein. I'm a private process server from the Springfield, Oregon area. Thank you for this opportunity to address you. And I'm speaking here in support of this bill. Although as a private process server, you might consider me competition to the sheriff's office, the fact of the matter is there is a statute that limits the amount the court will award for the service of process to the prevailing party in a civil matter. And this amount is tied to what the sheriff can charge. So as you heard in the previous testimony, the last time the Sheriff's Association requested an increase was in 2009. And at that time, their in-house study had figured out it was between $70 and $80 per serve. And as you just heard in the testimony, they still consider it about $80 to serve. So even though we do not have, as a private business, we do not have the overhead that a sheriff's office would have, and as they testified to the fact that there are many serves they have to do without cost, without charging. So if they wanted to cover all their costs, they'd be looking at $100 per paper. We definitely, as private process servers, don't have that kind of overhead. But we do have overhead, and over the years, cost of living increases. So being kind of having a glass ceiling there, holding what our clients can be awarded by the courts, puts us in a position where when we charge more for the service than what the sheriff would charge, then our clients, there can be sometimes ill feeling among our clients for that reason. So that's one of the reasons I support. The second reason is as a taxpayer in the state of Oregon, as previously testified to, we're subsidizing the sheriff's office for these services of these civil summons and complaints. And I feel that this should be more upon the litigators in a case rather than on the taxpayers of the state. And thank you for your time. That's all I had.
All right. Thank you, Matt. Any questions? Thank you very much for coming up and giving your testimony. So we're going to go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 2618A. What I'm going to go ahead and do is open up a work session on House Bill 2611, which was the one we had before. I understand we do have our paperwork, and it's just a straight motion, I believe.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2611 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Thatcher moves House Bill 2611 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Any objections? So ordered. Chair will carry 2611 to the floor. We'll close the work session on that. I am going to make a statement, probably should have done it while we had the record open, but on House Bill 2777, I am asking, and I think it was pretty well assumed, that Senator Denborough would take the lead on point on this. I would encourage, and I know that you will, work with the various interests and see what you can come up with to address those concerns. I do think it's, from my perspective, appropriate if it can be done internally to do it that way instead of sticking something else in the statute. Any other comments or questions? All right, with that, we're going to go ahead and close the committee for today. We'll schedule to be back tomorrow at 8:30. We're adjourned. We'll be back tomorrow at 8:30.